Like Call It What You Want, which we know is your favorite podcast about the beautiful game, Vuori is committed to delivering a great experience for everyone, which is highlighted by their new perspective on performance apparel. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. In fact, I'm rocking their Stratotech polo right now, along with their Sunday performance jogger pants, so I can be business on top when I'm on camera, but super comfortable on the bottom. And it's just the best. Vuori gear is incredibly versatile, and it can be used for just about any activity. Running, training, swimming, lounging around, hosting podcasts, doing errands, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. And for our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/call it. That's Vuori.com/call it. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/call it and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
Dallas, Texas, the one-time frontier town that is now a fitting stage for the CONCACAF Nations League Finals. Well, the United States arrive at Jerry World focused on winning a hat-trick of Nations League titles. Can the Reggae Boys go one better and pull off a big upset tonight?
And an early opportunity lofted into the back post, and the opportunity is on, and the opening goal is scored! Jamaica with the shock opener! Into that near post, it comes through, and there's the equalizing goal! The U.S. have saved themselves in this Nations League! Heartbreak for Jamaica, who had been outstanding. Fainting, Haji Wright is in! Haji Wright with the go-ahead goal! And he's put the U.S. ahead in this Nations League semifinal. Haji Wright puts this one to bed. The United States in the final of the CONCACAF Nations League.
And I was like...
Hey, everybody, what is up? And welcome to a very special edition of Call It What You Want. We're on location here in Arlington, Texas. We're just on this field last night. There were two games for the semifinals of the Nations League. The first one was the U.S. men's national team barely getting by Jamaica, 3-1 in extra time. And then Mexico doing the business against Panama, 3-0. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside a few legends. I have a U.S. soccer legend here, Tony Miola, and a Chivas USA legend, Jesse March.
Yes, yes, Jimmy.
And yes. I think the big takeaway for me straight away about the U.S. game, better to be lucky than good. Big Tones, you called the game. What were your thoughts now that we've had a night to sleep on it?
Yeah, didn't sleep much on it. I can tell you that. It kept me awake quite a bit. Fortunate, you give them credit. You give Greg's side credit for battling and coming back and getting the result that they eventually needed. But it wasn't pretty for a 90-minute stretch for me. Especially in the first half, where it didn't seem like we had a lot of answers to this low block. And we've heard this conversation and this story for a little while. How does the U.S. team break this low block down? But they got some great performances off the bench. Gio Reyna came off the bench. Haji Wright, obviously, came off the bench. I thought Brendan Aaronson played his part. There were some positives in this. Overall, though, Jesse, I was wanting a little bit more in this match from them. And I'll everything we say today, I want to start with the fact that never take anything away from what Jamaica did last night. They were organized, five players down from guys we normally would see starting. So the cards were stacked against them a little bit, but man, they put on some performance and gave the U.S. fits up until that call by Whittingham in the 96th minute where they got the equalizer. And then you kind of felt from there the U.S. was going to take over and win this one.
Yeah, I think that specifically the last 30 minutes was the best phase of the match. And Jamaica, I think, was deflated by that last second goal. I felt like we lacked discipline. Positional discipline with the ball to do some simple things in terms of build up and getting into the final third. So people always talk about this low block thing, right? And teams play with a low block because it's hard to break down. Like, this isn't a big secret. But there's a few little simple things that you can do, which is normally you're building on one side on the left, and then you're trying to create a couple little dynamic movements to see if you can create a little bit of space either in the back line of the opponent or then through the midfield. And then if you can't get down the line and penetrate, then maybe you go to the other side or you create a little combination through the middle. And unfortunately, the game didn't look like that. It kind of looked like guys running around and trying individual plays and long balls and seeing if they could come up with one play or one solution on their own, which I think is all fair. Like, you want your attacking players to see if they can try to make a play, but do it within the structure so that it's easy for everybody to understand how everything fits together.
Yeah, one of the things I think about whether I'm coaching or watching a game is the rhythm of each particular team. So if I'm coaching, you know, you have a rhythm that's, this is the U.S. last night. It just lacked a little bit of that pop. And then in the extra time, it picked up a little bit. And with the addition of Gio and some urgency from Brendan and Haji obviously being in good spots to finish off plays, we got to see that. And that has to be in place against Mexico on Sunday for them to really be competitive throughout the whole game. I think we'll have our moments, of course. But I think one of the things that I think about is the lack of urgency. There was a comment from Tyler Adams after the game saying, we lacked a competitive edge from the very first minute. And obviously that was on full display when we gave up a goal 30 seconds in. I mean, giving up a goal in the first 5 minutes of a half, or of any half, or the last 5 minutes, it's just concentration. And we just weren't switched on. And I think that, I thought that was gonna give us more urgency, right? Okay, cool, we got punched in the face. What are we gonna do about it? And it just played right into what Jamaica wanted. They got the early goal, they sat back, they're really well organized, Jamaica. I'm glad you brought up that we should show them respect, because I thought their game plan was almost spot on for about 95 minutes. But there's something about that lack of urgency throughout the game, that competitive edge that Tyler was talking about, that gives me some pause. And I say this, and Tones, I'm gonna let you speak, but I've got the microphone right now. I say this right now, is because we saw this against Trinidad in leg one of the Nations League quarterfinals, where we had trouble breaking down a low block. We needed a red card in about 65 to 70 minutes to unlock them. When you start to see it in multiple games, that becomes what I like to call a trend, Big Tones, and yeah. I we need to shake that.
Yeah, we go back to the World Cup. The Netherlands did this to us, right, to knock us out. They went into a low block, so we're going to have to figure that part out. But the concentration part, that, I think that would be disturbing from a coaching standpoint, right? You're locked in. It's the first 30 seconds of a match. You get a throw in. You don't defend it well. You don't defend the cross well. You don't defend well at the back post. Your goalkeeper is a foot in the goal when he's trying to make a play. Like, there's so many things that went wrong. And then all of a sudden, you come into this thinking that Jamaica's going to sit deeper. They're not really going to pressure you high. And now they go up 1-0. Now the hill just became a little bit steeper to climb, right? Because you've kind of played into what Jamaica's doing. We have to get to a point where, for me, this is my opinion, where we understand how to break these things down. And we're getting to a point where we stretch the defense either sideline to sideline, and it's difficult when they're lower from end line to end line, because I think we have the quality in this team, but it'll sound weird. I feel like we're thinking, and my father used to tell me all the time, he had this saying in Italian, and it translates, and it's kind of a trite saying, but don't think because you're not equipped, he used to tell me. He said, by the time you think in a game, he used to tell me, the play's over. Like, you got to go to plan B. And I feel like we're thinking about the next step where we're not reacting to what's happening on the field. That's the sense I get.
It's like second nature is what you're talking about. Right. Like, you create a team and a system where everything is second nature and everybody knows what the next play is at all moments of the game. That's your goal as a manager, right, is to create that feeling and structure on the pitch. And what I found is actually when you have more of the structure and understanding and you can create simplicity from complex things, that it actually empowers the players to go after the game and doesn't handcuff them to feel like they're always, what do I do next? And so, for sure, that just when you take that concept, when you look at the first half specifically, we looked a little bit frozen by not really sure how to put it all together. And then it starts to look like 11 individuals instead of a team.
Okay, let's get into a little game that we like to play here on Call What You Want called Stock Up, Stock Down. Do we want to start on the downside and go a little negative and end in positive, or we want to
Yes.
split? We'll go down first.
Yes.
Okay. Jesse is eager to talk stock up, stock down. So, down.
I like ending on a positive.
Okay, let's end on a positive. So. Stock down, who didn't help themselves these 90-plus minutes?
Yeah, I would go Joe Scally, you know, and I think we knew that it was not going to be the easiest thing for him to step in that Sergiño Dest is the player in that position. But we also talked about that we thought he had some good performances in the Bundesliga. I actually don't think he doesn't do well on this play, but he's put in a situation where it's very difficult to deal with it. And I think communication ahead of time would have been good. Some of these moments and counters where he has to deal with situations 1v1 aren't easy, but in general, it just didn't really go his way, you know, I felt for him at about this yellow card moment because I wanted to see him do well. I think he's been good in the Bundesliga, and I wanted to see him step in. And we've talked a little bit on the podcast in the past that I think one of our biggest concerns in our whole roster is that outside back position. And the good thing about Joe is he can play both right and left, and I think we need him to be a big part of the national team moving forward.
And getting subbed out at 45 minutes is never a good sign. So he is probably a little bit down himself, not only being stocked down with Jesse. Who are you going with in this one, Big Tones?
I went with Malik Tillman in this one. I didn't think we got out of him what we've been seeing consistently over the week over the month here at PSV. And there were moments where he got into decent positions. This was his one big opportunity where this is right at the end of the first half where you think, okay, it's not going well. This is the most compelling chance we created in the first half. They're just about to go in the dressing room. You can change his whole game. I was a little bit surprised he was on this restart based on I don't know his history of restarts. And he eventually comes out for Brendan Aaronson, who I thought made a difference in the game. But I don't think it was a strong performance from Malik Tillman.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about Tillman is he also got that great pass from Gio a couple minutes after halftime, and he just didn't take it with both hands. So I agree with you. I mean, we were pretty high on him getting this opportunity. I was high on him prior to this. Like, this is the time. Let's trust him running the show for us. And it just didn't have a little bit of what we were looking for in that regard. All right, my stock down, and this is me being the resident center back of the show. I'm going with Chris Richards, and I say this with nothing but love for Chris. I hold him to the highest standards. My concern is really on the play in the 62nd minute. We're playing against a low block. He's got space here, as you can see, and he gets outrun by a guy, admittedly, is super fast.
Yes,
but that
Richard.
Said, the positioning there and the wherewithal to understand the situation and how this is the only way that Jamaica is going to hurt us throughout the rest of the game is just this one break. And I remember playing at times in a Bruce Arena with the national team where he would say, hey, you're going to be 1v1 in the back for about 5 to 10 seconds as we try to apply legitimate pressure on whatever world-class team we were playing at that particular moment. And you knew you were going to be isolated. What are you going to do about it? That changes how you approach the ball and your positioning. And sometimes you can't win everything in front, so you have to be really thoughtful about anything that goes up and over. So in this particular moment, that could have cost us the game. That could have been it. If he had a little bit more composure there, maybe it's 2-0, and now we're talking about playing in the third place game with the U.S. team. So these moments, I expect him to make these types of plays, and I don't want to be thinking about, I wonder what Tim Ream would have done in that particular situation. How would Mark McKenzie have handled that? Because that just means I'm thinking about the next player as opposed to the center back.
I'm smiling only because you and I played together. I'm wondering if that was you and I in the field, the conversations we would have been having.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I actually think Turner could have been in position to help deal with that.
And right? He did. He came off his line a little bit later in the game to solve that. But you're right. He was stuck to his line a little bit. But Chris Richards had such a gap there. He's got to cut him off when he's running.
You and I.
We would have had a couple conversations.
I would have loved to have been.
And you wouldn't want to have been there because it would have been really one-sided in favor of Tony. All right, let's get into stock up. Let's end on some positives for this particular segment. We'll go back to you, Jesse. Stock up.
Yeah, I think you could argue a lot of different guys. I'm going with a guy that I think now has a real chance with this performance to establish himself for the future, and that's Haji Wright. I think coming in off the bench, and then using him on the left and then putting him up front as the striker, he was providing depth in the buildup and in moments, and Gio Reyna needed movement like that to find plays to make a difference in the game. So I'll talk a little bit later about the relationship of those two within the match. But really good to see him come in, really good to see him playing with energy, really good to see him playing vertical, you know, and enjoying it. Looked like he was really enjoying the match. So I thought this was a big, big moment for him in his career with the U.S. national team, and I hope that he continues to use it forward to gain more confidence and to be a big part of this.
Yeah, I love that, and his performance was fantastic. And sometimes when you weren't expected to come in because he was He was at an airport heading to Dubai with his family to spend some
time. Okay.
Yeah, and he got the call from Greg, and he said, I'm in.
We talked about when those two were replaced on the roster, that they both, him and Brendan Aaronson, had a really good chance of playing and now producing and being a factor in these games. So that turned out to be the case.
Also, him and Brendan played really well once they got snubbed initially.
Yeah.
They had good games on the weekend, and he scored to put them into the FA Cup semifinals. Coventry's first time since 1987. That's a big deal. Big Tone, stock up.
Yeah, I went with Gio Reyna here. I thought he came in and did everything that we have kind of expected from Gio in the picture that we've all painted in our heads. And clearly the two assists, people will look at that, but there were other moments where he was really composed. He's clearly comfortable on the ball, right? It's his specialty. The game against Mexico might look a little bit differently because there might be some more work to do behind him. Everything on the night was in front of him, but even this moment here where he picks the ball off and it comes on a turnover and they get the goal here from Haji Wright, and you mentioned Haji Wright smiling all the way to the end of the match, and then the interview and the post game, he was smiling, and this is what we want to see. And he's in a moment right now in his career where he's trying to figure things out, if you will, right? How do I get into my club team set up? And we didn't know what he would look like. I mean, you're not playing. I think he played, 29 minutes or 38 minutes, okay, in a couple of months now. And he comes and gives a great 70-minute performance.
And I'll say this. This is not to take anything away from Greg Berhalter, but it was so clear that Gio was needed in the game and that he was the potential to be the difference maker. We needed somebody who could play in and around their front line and now make these kinds of passes that were going to be difficult, that were going to be clear in terms of what was going to add up to some chances. So, really good for
him. There is something ironic, I don't know if that's the right word, about Gio Reyna having a performance that could have saved the reputation of Greg Berhalter in some capacity. I don't know how far we want to dive into that. Actually, we won't dive into it at all. Stock up for me. Let's get into it. I want to talk about Tyler Adams because it was just so exciting to see him representing the red, white, and blue once again. The last time we saw him in these colors was in the World Cup, the round of 16 against the Dutch. So for him to be back out in the team and back on the field, I actually thought he made a big difference. I know that he obviously holds the guys to a high standard, holds himself to a high standard. He made a ton of plays. He's just doing that little thankless dirty work that he's so good at and known for and makes a big difference. These little details I think he brings to the table. I know he's upset about coming out, but they obviously want to manage his minutes. I can tell there he's not happy with Greg, but Greg definitely made the right decision by taking him out. You want to manage that hamstring. It's been a significant injury for some time. But what I think was interesting, and this might not be a like-for-like reference here, but I hearken back, and I don't know why I thought this, to the Champions League final where Manchester City and Pep Guardiola elected not to play Fernandinho. In that game, he went with Ilkay Gundogan in the six. And we did something similar where we put Yunus Musa there, who I like him higher up the field. I wonder if he was a little bit higher up the field, how that game would have looked if we had a proper six there. Whether it was Adams or Cardoso, but when Adams came in, it felt like the balance of the team was a little bit better, and I want to see more of that. So I'm very curious as to whether Greg is going to elect to start a traditional six. And this is, I love Yunus Musa. I have his pajamas at home, but that's not his best position. And the asks of him for that position are a little bit different.
Well, even when we talked a little bit about positional discipline, so Tyler came in, clearly showed leadership. I thought every step he took on the pitch, I don't think he lost a pass. I thought he picked, he won some balls. It was almost a perfect performance for Tyler for 39 minutes. But the main thing for me is now you had a guy in the middle of the pitch who was sticking to his role, playing in his spot. It was a foundation and an anchor for what they were trying to do. And then additionally, he's telling guys to go higher, to come deeper, to press, to go here. So, all the things that I know about Tyler, which, I could talk about a million different things, but his presence on a pitch, his ability to be a leader, his ability to compete and go after a game, have urgency, like this is who Tyler Adams is. So it was great that, I advocated for not bringing him. And by the way, the whole time I'm watching and I'm proud of the performance, I'm like, please don't get hurt. Please don't. Please don't get hurt. So I was maybe one of the only people that was in the stadium that was happy to see him step off the pitch because I know how important his health is to his performances.
And there were two moments in that match, right? He became our metronome for a little bit, right? They got stuck in twice in the corner, right in front of the bench, and all of a sudden, ball came out and he found Weston McKennie on the other side. Just relieved the pressure. Nothing too intricate, right? But he recognized that, yeah, okay, it's better here to keep the ball than to force something. And I think that's what you get out of Tyler Adams, right? And his leadership, when he's on the field, the way people feel about him, and you can sense it, right? You get a feeling that he's a calming factor for everybody around him.
No, and I love that. And I'm still very curious as to whether he is going to start. We'll talk about it a little bit more in our preview for the Mexico game on tomorrow's podcast. But we got tradition here. We got word of the day. Call it what you want. Word of the day. Are you guys ready?
Yes.
I'm going to give you the clues as well. The word itself is footbolt.
Footbolt.
Yes. Footbolt. Okay. Perhaps the greatest player. Here's the first clue. I'm just going to get right into the clues. Perhaps the greatest player this country has ever produced has the distinction of being the only player to have played on the winning side for both Barcelona and Real Madrid during 5-0 El Clasico victories. Okay, that's clue number one. The second one, this men's national team won an international tournament despite qualifying after another country was disqualified. Footbolt.
Wow. Those are convoluted clues.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
You went.
Which country? Went, which language?
Didn't get any further apart with those clues. Right there. What was the Real Madrid one again? Real Madrid Barcelona.
The player played for both.
Both
in 5-0 wins. So obviously influential in both.
Wow.
I'm gonna go Brazil.
Hmm.
Bolt. So who would have been the player that played?
I have no idea.
Jesse doesn't speak Portuguese either.
Yeah. Obrigado.
Because Figo comes. I'm trying to.
My family is from this country. If that helps at all. So it's not Brazil.
Conrad.
As much as I want to be Conrad Dino.
Conrad Dino.
It's not real. It's not real.
Brazil. That's out.
Conrad has to be Irish.
Close, but not right. I have a little Irish, but not majority.
Okay.
It's Denmark.
Denmark.
Denmark. Football. You guys both get zero.
Explain. So
Michael Laudrup.
Michael Laudrup,
Michael Laudrup was the first one, and they won the Euros 1992 when Yugoslavia got disqualified.
Is that the word? Okay.
Footboat. Yeah, that's how you say it. Footboat.
I would challenge the pronunciation.
Yeah, that's
okay. Fine. My family's from Denmark. Whatever. All right, we're going to take our break here on Call What You Want. When we come back, Greg Berhalter had some things to say after the game. We're going to get into it right after this.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
You know, I think I heard somewhere, read somewhere, why did Gio get called into camp? You guys hear any of that? Anyone? No? Well, I think he showed why he got called into camp. You know, amazing quality, amazing talent. And for us, it's about supporting him through the difficult times of adapting to the Premier League. But his quality is unquestionable. When you see the plays he made on both the second and third goal, but I think most importantly, the ball he wins, right, and then makes the pass. He has that quality that not many players have, and it's clear that he deserves to play on this team.
All right, the first thing I think about, boys, when I see that clip from Greg is, Mr. Berhalter, please hit like and subscribe when you're following and listening to our show. Because I think he's directly talking to a clip that we put out, the discussion that we had, specifically with you, Jesse Marsh, about whether you're we should bring in Gio Reyna into camp. And to give some context to everybody, we were just saying it from a culture standpoint and setting precedent. And he's not playing a lot for his club. He left off Brendan Aaronson because he didn't play a lot for his club. Obviously, he got included later. So What do you think about those comments, first and foremost, from Greg? Because it feels like he's taking a shot at maybe you, if I just put it out there.
I thought it was taking a shot at you.
Me?
Yeah.
By why, opening up the conversation?
Well, listen, he's wrong, first of all, right? Because we didn't say that Gio shouldn't be brought into camp. In fact, we made a list, all three of us, of all the players that we thought were locks that should be coming into camp, and Gio was on that, right? We were just having discussions, like you said, a little bit of, okay, what... When you're putting together a national team squad at any moment, and now you have to evaluate form, fitness, everything else, and what you need from the team. And we talk later about even understanding the togetherness and the mentality and the growth and development of the team really now continuing to push, not just from a football standpoint, but from a togetherness and real team belief standpoint. And to be fair, this is what we saw last night. You know, as much as the game wasn't anything that any of us, and I'm sure including Greg, would have hoped, is you still saw this American belief that helped us find a way to get the result.
And Big Tones, this is the first time you've seen that clip. What are your thoughts?
We were busy after the match last night calling another game, but the first thing that comes to mind is, what the hell is he addressing this for? Like, your team, I'm sorry, congratulations on the win. We just talked about it. Your team performed pretty poorly for 90-plus minutes, given what we expected. And this for me is a deflection. Right? So you did him a favor if he's talking to you or he's talking to anybody else, because this is a deflection. I don't understand how you can address this in a match. You're a national team coach, right? I'm always rooting for the national team. I know you guys are always as well, right? And we want the best for this team. But the reality is that he didn't address anything. I'm sure he addressed some of it in the press conference, but he clearly was thinking about something else that had nothing to do with what happened in the match or how he was prepping for the match. Because I don't know, did they tell him before the match? Did they tell him after the match? Either way, he felt it important enough to address it in a moment where they almost got knocked out against Jamaica last night.
Against a weakened Jamaica.
And maybe should have. But to Jesse's point, credit to them, right? They battled. They showed the spirit. We talked about that. But I'm just surprised that you would go here on that night.
And really go out of your way to say, hey, I don't know if you guys heard about this. Like, he's telling a joke. Hey, you know, a couple people walk into a bar and it's just a couple podcasters talking shop about what we think about the U.S. men's national team. I thought it was interesting that he went out of his way to discuss that. Now, when I think about the type of analysis that you give, Jesse, about the team and whether it's on the podcast or on the pregame show, halftime show on Paramount Plus, you talk like you would, if you were in charge of the team, you would do X. Is that something you want? Like, say things don't go well for us in Copa America. Would that be something you would entertain, like, in reality?
The job?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. No. I don't want that job, right? And so, and by the way, I think we've been very, our job, when I do this, okay, so I'm new to this media thing, and I do it because I want to continue to kind of be part of the game and support what's going on with U.S. soccer. And I'm a fan of U.S. soccer and of MLS and everything else. And so when I do this, I try to give insight as to the way I see things. Now, I don't think I'm always right, and but I have opinions based on my experiences and the players I know and what I've seen and what I'm watching. And so I don't think that anything that we've really done as a podcast has been that unfair. I actually think we've been pretty supportive. And specifically when we're analyzing the players and how they play in Europe, we want them to be successful, right? We sit from like an analytical chair, but from a fan chair. And you know, like to see Christian Pulisic playing so well, to see Tyler Adams come back. I want to also talk about like watching the interview with Gio Reyna after the match and seeing how happy he was and the smile on his face. And this is what I want to see from our players, is that their personality, that they're enjoying their football, that they're enjoying what they're doing with the national team. And I think that will lead them to continue to be more and more successful. So, you know, even when we discuss Greg or the tactics or anything else, it's always about, are we maximizing what we're getting out of the team, and is the tactical model what we think is best for the group, and then analyzing it versus what Mexico looks like or Panama or Jamaica. And this is, when I'm trying to provide something, that's what I'm trying to provide. So listen, I don't want anybody to take things too personally, because that's not what it's meant to do. We're just here trying to give a little bit of insight.
Now, Big Tones, just out of respect, Would you take the job if it was offered to you?
Absolutely no. I don't want the job. But as a manager, right, you inherently expect somebody to say your team played poorly at some time. If not, it's like this is one big kumbaya, right? Like everything is great and everything is not great. Right. But there's an expectation. You lived it as much as any American coach ever lived it. So I'm just curious when someone says something about you can't take that personal.
No.
Your job is to go and now in this case for Greg, go worry about Mexico and how you beat Mexico in the final.
Listen, when you represent clubs. Okay, I can't really talk about national teams as much, but you have a job to do in terms of the 360 holistic approach to doing the job because the fans are watching everything. And by the way, the media part, especially when you're an American in England and you could talk to Bob Bradley or myself and talk about the scrutiny and it's part of the job. And by the way, all the coaches in the Premier League get scrutiny, right? But as an American, we have to understand that there's something that goes along with that. And by the way, not afraid of it. You know, and if I need to stand in a press conference and talk about certain things and explain why I do things, and you have to always be prepared, I don't ever take it personally. I just understand that this is part of the job. And so I'm not, and by the way, again, please, you have to know, you can't be afraid. That's what it is. That's what it is. And you have to embrace it and you have to understand how to use it the right way.
Well, if offered, I would take the job. I just want to throw that out there. And I would not be afraid to name names, Greg Berhalter. I'd be like, listen, Jesse Marsh, I got a problem with that guy. And if he wants to meet out in the street, we're going to make it happen. All right, let's move into Haji Wright, though. I thought Gio Reyna, obviously, especially in extra time where the team looked like they were relaxed and played the way that we wanted them to, and maybe in the style that we expected. We talked about it a little bit earlier. Gio was good and made the telling pass. And even when he came in a couple minutes into the second half, he made that pass to Malik Tillman that almost got there, that almost unlocked Jamaica, and maybe the result would have been different after 90. But let's talk about Haji Wright. He wasn't even supposed to be on the team. He wasn't selected initially. Josh Sargent has to withdraw because of injury, and now Haji Wright comes in and scores two goals. Unbelievable for him, who seems to be riding away right now, Big Tones, because he scored a lot of goals for Coventry in the championship.
Yeah, he's been on fire the last 6 weeks or so, and I think he came in more as a left-sided player, but he really, for me, played as a second forward, right? Yeah. And I've been screaming for two forwards in this team and playing with three in the back for years ad nauseum, right? I want to see it, but you can see here that inside channel, and I thought Ricardo Pepi unlocked a lot of things from clearly a world-class pass from Gio Reyna here. Pretty good finish. Still had some work to do, but he's in front of the goalkeeper. Expected to finish that one there. And then Gio picks one off here and another good. But again, he's in this inside channel. He really, I'm trying to think back, Jesse, maybe you can remember. Think of a time where he played as a winger at any point in this thing. He really was a second forward, although he came in on the left-hand side based on the tactics that they were playing.
He started on the left, but then once they brought Brendan Aaronson in, they moved him into the two-striker role. And it's funny, you know, we talked about the Wolves match on the podcast, and I said that I thought overall his first – I said there were like two performances, that there was the first 75 and then the last 15. And I said in the last 15, in the first 75, he was standing on the touchline too much in transition moments. He wasn't involved in running into the box. And that I always like to teach fast, strong players to be aggressive and look athletic and to use their athleticism to reward themselves. Then when they put him in striker, almost all he did at that moment was look to run in behind and now create problems for the back line of Jamaica. And now if you think about the relationship between him and Gio Reyna, for Gio Reyna to be successful, he needs somebody who really wants to run in and be off the back line and look to penetrate. And if you're Haji Wright, you need someone like Gio Reyna that can make that pass. So the combination of moving him into the striker position and then having Gio continue to float around and be in dangerous spots, because sometimes the midfielders for the U.S., they start drifting out wide in the buildup and they're not putting themselves in dangerous positions to play through lines, to make the kinds of plays that make a difference. And for me, the best thing about Gio was that he came in the game, he put himself in difficult positions, he was like, give me the ball, and I'm going to find ways to make the next play.
Yeah, what I love about that first goal in particular from Haji Wright is the fact that the way he ran off the shoulder, the timing of the run, but as it pertains to Gio,
It was a broken play. Christian ended up losing the ball. Gio's in a good spot, and his that little hesitation, and then even the hesitation from Haji Wright when he's on the top of the box in a 1v1 situation. I'm going to take this guy on. I'm going to make something happen. That's confidence, and confidence is a hell of a drug, Tony, and I think that we need to see more of that. I know we're going to discuss, and we have another podcast tomorrow about our preview for Mexico, but I'm interested in, is that enough now for Haji Wright to maybe merit a start? And I know we have a question from some of our loyal listeners that's going to pertain to this.
Yeah,
let's tease him a little bit.
I think it's got to be a discussion, right? When you sit and you start the game plan for Mexico, I think absolutely it's got to be a discussion. There's a couple other positions on the field that I think they need to discuss for sure, right? But you know, oftentimes with goal scorers, right, you got to ride the wave, right? He's in really good form right now. But I want to go back to your point about the runs off the shoulder. I feel like we've come out of a couple of national team camps and have gotten the indication we need to find Flo Balogun because he likes to run off the shoulder. We need people to recognize that run, and Gio's one of those guys. And makes me think, if you pair Gio, and we saw it, what was a Mexico game, right, where he snuck one in on that right-hand side, and Balogun scores, may even been his first goal for the national team, if memory serves me right. But that type of run, Gio's a guy that can unlock that for players, as you said. But it makes me believe, do they start thinking now, well, Balogun makes those runs, he's our number nine, he's the starter, or do you go with the guy that is hot right now, and that's Haji Wright?
If you're asking me, I would continue with Balogun, Weah, and Pulisic. I think these three guys are going to be a cornerstone of how the team moves forward. Clearly, Gio, when he's fit and sharp, and like if he looks like he does last night, and still the question will be, given game fitness and the fact that he played what? So he played 75 minutes last night. Like, can he have a repeat performance? I think you have to start Gio, but the question is, how long will he be able to go and perform at that level? And by the way, this game has potential to be more open. That game didn't require so much physical output from the attacking players because Jamaica was so deep, especially in the second half, and it didn't require full game fitness. Mexico game will be different. But I think Balogun, and we've talked about this with Monaco, and when I've been in the stadium a couple times live to watch Monaco play, and Balogun is always making really good runs off the back line, but he doesn't always have players that are looking for that and are feeding him the right way. And then it's kind of led to Monaco taking him off the pitch and using him more as a reserve or out wide, which I haven't liked to see. I want to see him being successful and being a real striker. So I would continue with that. I would think Gio comes in into the group. You know, we can talk more about this tomorrow. But, yeah, I mean, I think you have to have a balance for this game of continuing in the process of what you're trying to achieve with the team, but then also looking at which players are ready and in form and are performing.
Just very quickly on that point, I thought that Balogun in particular, or maybe the team overall, we just didn't have that third person running. It wasn't consistent enough because Balogun, he puts himself in good spots. We play a good entry pass into him, and then there's nobody making that initial movement so that he can see it out of the corner of his eye and play him into that space. He's very good there, but if we're not making those runs, and fairness to Jamaica, I thought they were very organized.
Yeah, and I think the way it worked out was a lot of times because we would have some rotations on the wing on one side and the other, and Balogun's kind of waiting in the middle for something to develop so that he can be in the box, and at times it was almost like him against three center backs, you know, or maybe two as they're shifting over. So, yeah, of course, could we find him a little bit more? Could we have the right kind of timing of runs? And then there was the discipline of the tactics in the first half, where by about the 25th minute, there were players running all over the pitch. And the thing that I said even yesterday was, it's tough to be a player on the field when you have a tactical system and your expectation is that when you get balls specifically in tight spaces that you're expecting movement and ideas in certain spots with certain players, and they're on the other side of the pitch or they're on the back line, and then there's no real continuity to what you're trying to achieve.
All right, we're going to tap the brakes here on the show. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Mexico and Panama and Mexico's big 3-0 win, so don't go anywhere.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Welcome back, everybody, to Call It What You Want. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Tony Miola and Jesse Marsh, and we're here in Arlington, Texas. Now, we want to continue talking about the U.S. men's national team, but I guess we should talk about the other two teams that played in the Nations League semifinal, Mexico and Panama, last night, which followed the U.S. game. So they knew that whoever won last night was going to take on the U.S., and it was Mexico. Pretty good performance from them, all things considered. Jimmy Lozano, they call it Jimmy Ball that he's been playing. I thought they looked pretty sharp, all things considered. Big 3-0 win, if I hadn't mentioned that already. I thought they looked dangerous on set pieces, which is like, wow, that's interesting about Mexico. And then I saw the possession, only 40% possession. Huh, usually they have a lot of the ball. That's interesting about Mexico. They had 6 shots on goal. All 6 of them were on goal. Great execution, all things considered, from Mexico. Panama, I thought, was in there like 10, 15 minutes in either half, with dictating the game a little bit, but not enough to ultimately change the results. Jesse, I'll come to you first. What your big takeaways from this, and how impressed were you with Mexico overall?
So there's a term in German called souverän. When they say a souverän Leistung, it means a total performance, right? And I thought Mexico, it wasn't a total performance, but they were clear with what they were trying to achieve. That's the point, is I thought how they used their wingers and how they were active to try to find space behind Panama's back line, and if Panama wanted to try to defend with a 5, and how they wouldn't allow them to just now keep things in front of them, something that the U.S. wasn't able to really do against Jamaica. They were really good in this game in terms of that. And defensively, they have a little bit of a question mark of speed in the back, which will be important for the match on Sunday. But in general, it's a Mexico team that looks like they have their swagger back, that understands a little bit of how they want to play now, that's able to execute it, that has the pieces that can play that way. So it sets up for me a really interesting matchup on Sunday, that's for sure.
Yeah, I thought they were good on the night. I thought Panama was also good on the night. And you take that 5-minute stretch at the end. I thought Mexico started well the first 10 minutes. Panama started to grow in the match once they could find the midfield a little bit. And we knew they were going to at some point. And then that last 5 minutes of the first half, the 2 goals, and we were just talking about it right in the last segment. You give up goals in those moments. They should have been down 1-0. Their goalkeeper makes a really good save on the other Edson Alvarez header earlier in that match. And then he gets the first goal. But for me, the game changed in the second half, because when Panama started to really attack Mexico, the Ochoa save that he made, that double save, the second one was a little bit easier. But that save there, if you give Panama a goal in that moment, the confidence really, really grows. And they were all over Mexico. They get the save, and then they go down the other end of the field, and they make it 3-0, and it's done and dusted. But Panama, I think, is one of those teams, Jimmy, in CONCACAF that can give people problems, can give teams problems. But in the end, you saw the quality from Mexico. In the moments that they needed to be really good in both sides of the field, they were.
I think what's interesting, too, really quick, Jesse, is that Mexico have some depth in some ways. I was surprised we didn't see Santi Jimenez, given how well he's been playing for Feyenoord this season. And Chucky Lozano is coming off the bench. And now, obviously, when I look at our team, we've got some depth, too, that obviously came off and made a big difference, or came on and made a big difference in this one. When you think about the final, just briefly looking ahead, because we have a special podcast to preview the Mexico-U.S. game on Sunday, what are you kind of, let's say, early worries or concerns for the U.S. with how Mexico played?
I think the more open the game is, the better it is for the U.S. You know, so I think they should press high. I think they should go after Mexico. I think they should be aggressive. But I'm not so sure Mexico should do the same thing. I think Mexico would benefit from keeping things a little bit more, a little tighter defensively. They saw that the U.S. has a little bit of trouble breaking down a lower block, look to go on the transition. And then still, when they have possession, they have some good movements and good ideas. And I think they can hurt the U.S. in possession. But can the U.S. be good in pressing? Can the U.S. be good in attacking transition? That, for me, will determine how good they can be on the day.
Ooh, it's going to be a good one on Sunday, U.S. versus Mexico. It's going to be on Paramount Plus. We'll obviously have a special podcast about that tomorrow, a big preview for you. But we want to get to your questions first. We've got a little mailbag segment coming up right after this.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, welcome back to Call What You Want. I'm Jimmy alongside Tony and Jesse, and we have a little mailbag segment to get into. You've got mail, and I
can't
wait.
I think this is our first mailbag or mail something or so. I mean, I'm sure we had to sift through thousands
yes. upon thousands, yes. and we're only whittling it down to two or three, which have been tough for our producers, all things considered.
Yeah.
But let's get into our first question, because I'm very curious as to what our loyal listeners have selected for us and what they want to hear from us. The first question is from Matt. What's up, Matt? Thank you for all your support. Who would you pick as the three overage players for the Olympics? Jesse Marsh coming to you first. Who are you thinking? Maybe we just go one each.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I would like to go with someone like, you know, Tim Ream or Richards, somebody that could, I think, be the best person in the team. But given their club responsibilities, I doubt that they'll be able to have the opportunity.
So you're suggesting a center back, though, because that feels like a vulnerability.
Sorry, I would go with a center back, yes. And so, you know, the name Miles Robinson comes to mind a little bit, Tony. I mean, I don't know. Wait,
would you go Walker Zimmerman at all?
Actually, I'm going to change. I'm going to go Walker Zimmerman.
Wait. So is there...
Does it count as my answer?
This is a preference, though. Yeah. If you go to Copa America, you're not being selected for the Olympics. Yeah. Have we taken that into consideration?
Are you sure? I mean, there's possibilities that you could be in both. You know,
if you're not a regular starting every game,
yeah,
that's a possibility.
And I mean, obviously, Walker Zimmerman or Miles Robinson would have responsibilities to their club in MLS, but I think that they could potentially be in that category.
I do think MLS clubs will more readily release their players for an Olympics than maybe we see. Although we didn't see it in Atlanta, Miles now over in Cincinnati, and maybe he's the guy.
I think Mark McKenzie would be a name I would throw into the hat as well. Even if he goes to the Copa America, could be a good chance for him. To get some valuable minutes and to be a leader, right? I mean, whoever comes into that center back position, we need them to be a leader. Now, are there any areas? I mean, we're kind of just talking center backs, but we're not going to bring three of those.
Well, good thing is we're not bringing a goalkeeper, I don't think, to this one. If Gaga Slonina is healthy, and then I'm a big Patrick Schulte fan. Brady has also been with the team. So in the past, we've always looked at the goalkeeping position. In a lot of ways, it's been a waste of a position, although a need. And I don't think in this team we do, so I think that's a positive.
It'd be really cool to play in an Olympics, by the way. Just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, it would be incredible. And I think maybe then I'd either go to a central midfield player or maybe a striker.
So spine of the team type player.
And now maybe that we have a lot of these options, could you get a Pepe? Could you get a Sargent? Could you get, you know, one of these guys?
Pepe's age eligible, so he wouldn't even count as an overage.
Oh, okay. All right. So, but, you know, something, a dynamic player up front that you think can also score goals and make a big difference for you that way. So, if you were to really ask, okay, who would be the best player to have, for me it would be Tyler Adams. But again, I think given a little bit of the injury history lately, what he'll be doing at Copa America, fact that he's with Bournemouth, like the fact is that he's probably not going to be available.
Yeah, center back and a holding midfielder or defensive midfielder I think would be key, especially guys that have those leadership qualities. All right, let's get into the next question. We appreciate that one, Matt. Obviously the big discussion point for us moving forward. This one is from Sense of Awe Music. I love that. How can we use players playing at the same club as a strength?
This used to be a little more commonplace in national teams, right? I think about the Italian national team. You used to have like a whole line from AC Milan, and then you'd have a whole midfield from another club, or, you know, a left back and a center back at a club. And we don't see a lot now. Obviously, for a couple of years, we've had Tim Ream and Anthony Robinson that have played next to each other. But with the way world football is now, it's really, really difficult.
I mean, the best example is Spain, right? When they had almost a Barcelona team and then a couple compliments from some Real Madrid players and played almost the exact same style without Messi, right? That team, I think, was incredibly dominant, and a big factor was because they were all playing together. I think we can, and I think we already have. Like, I think Anthony Robinson and Ream.
But you also have Weston McKennie and Timo Weah that played on the right side after we made the sub for Scally. And I actually thought that was the opposite. We didn't talk about it earlier, but I thought Weston should have been a little bit higher, kept him central, and dropped Timo Weah at the right back spot, moved Malik Tillman out wide right. Because Weston is so good at making that third person run into the box, especially when the ball's out wide. I thought that was a bit of a mistake there.
You know what's interesting is we highlighted on one of the coaches' corners the movements at PSV. Right, between Pepe, Tillman, and Dest. And with what Greg likes to do with some of these rotations as well, it might be good to, at that moment, it was Dest on the left fullback position, Pepe was playing the left wing, and then Tillman was kind of like one of the central players as a 10 or an 8. And they had some really good rotations and unbalanced Dortmund a lot and created chances that way. So I think that it's a good point. It's not so easy as just saying, okay, we're going to use these players here and those players there, and then it's all going to make sense. But I think there is a way to access the familiarity that some of these players have with each other.
All right, as you can tell, we could probably do a full show just on mailbag questions. Maybe we will in the future. Yeah. But as of right now, we have to take our last break of Call It What You Want, so don't go anywhere. We're going to talk a little U23 Olympic team a little bit further. All right, we got some great news for you on the Golazo Network on Monday. The U.S. is taking on France, and Thierry Henry, who manages the U23s for France. But even better news, the U.S. played today against Guinea and won 3-0. The goal scorers were Gomez, Busio, and Harriol. But the man of the match apparently was Griffin Yao, 2 assists. Unbelievable scenes from them. So on behalf of me and Tony and Jesse, we want to thank you guys for listening and watching. Make sure you tune in tomorrow for our special edition preview of U.S. versus Mexico. We'll see you soon.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Golazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.